As Iyanla Van Zandt once said, it's important that we share our experiences with other people. Your story will heal you, and your story will heal somebody else. At Project Sleep, we believe that your stories matter, which is why we train people with sleep disorders on how to share their stories through our Rising Voices program. This Rising Voices podcast series features a variety of firsthand stories from people living with sleep disorders around the world. Each person's story offers unique and important insights.
Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. Hello, everybody. So excited tonight to have a very special guest with us, Alexa, and she is joining us from Mexico. Hi, Alexa.
Hi, Julie.
We're so excited and so grateful for you for working through feeling nervous to share. I know that will resonate with a lot of people.
Thank you. I remember the first time I was abducted by aliens. In early 2019, when I was in my first year of college, I went to bed at my dad's house at 11 p.m. When I was falling asleep, a flying saucer came flying above my house. A penetrating and piercing white light emerged out of the lower part of the spacecraft until it reached my whole body. And my body rose towards the origin of that light. Suddenly, I was in a purple room tied to a chair in which I couldn't move. Fear was taking over me. A bunch of dark creatures approached me, and as soon as they were about to touch me, I was able to move and those images vanished. I became aware of my surroundings and realized I was completely drenched with sweat. On these and many other nights, the aliens appeared over my house and abducted me. When I tried to tell people about what I was experiencing, they had a hard time believing it. I needed to know what was wrong with me, so as a grade 19-year-old, I Googled alien abduction, and you'd be surprised at the search results. This was the first time I ever came across with the word narcolepsy. These horrifying experiences during the night made it difficult for me to feel productive during the day. Sometimes I didn't feel like I was safe. Being a college student studying pharmaceutical sciences, there was already a lot of pressure on me in school. I always tried to act as normal as possible so I could fit in with the people around me. My generation is heavily influenced by social media and the fact that I grew up surrounded by all these perfect pictures, publications, and videos of how we should look or how we should act just made it more difficult. I put a lot of effort into having the same amount of energy as the other students, but I was having these terrifying experiences at night, as well as feeling irresistibly sleepy during the day. I'd always been somewhat sleepy, and my parents thought that it was usual for a kid. While growing up, I began comparing myself to other people of the same age and started wondering why I always felt so tired and sleepy, or why I couldn't get through the day without taking at least one nap. I have always loved hanging out with friends, but in college, I had to choose between getting my homework done or going out with my friends. I began having trouble staying awake while driving to class. Sometimes I even parked my car for a few minutes because my eyes were so heavy and I needed a few minutes nap. One day, I even fell asleep while I was stopped at a red light. These feelings and experiences did not match the definition of a normal girl. Shortly after the abduction started happening, I decided to talk to my parents about how bad I was feeling and how much my nighttime hallucinations and daytime sleepiness were affecting my life. I told them about my Google search and that I thought I had something called narcolepsy, but they truly believed I was exaggerating. The same week I talked to my parents, I was driving home from college and felt a terrible blow to the head, followed by an extreme jerk to the neck. I woke up behind the wheel, realizing that I had caused not one, but two serious car crashes. Even though everyone involved was fine, I remember feeling completely shattered. My accident made my parents take my concerns seriously, and they took me to my first neurology appointment, just before I turned 20. After a bunch of tests, the specialist told me I have a condition called narcolepsy type 1, one of the two types of narcolepsy. Looking back, I realized I had been experiencing narcolepsy symptoms for years before getting a diagnosis. While getting my diagnosis seemed like the end of a long road, my journey of learning about my condition and understanding my symptoms was just beginning. I found out that narcolepsy is a neurological condition that affects how the brain regulates the sleep-wake cycle. The excessive daytime sleepiness I had been experiencing, like when I got in the car accident, is a primary symptom. But there are lesser-known symptoms that can affect people with narcolepsy's quality of life. As a person with narcolepsy type 1, I also experienced a symptom called cataplexy, which is a sudden muscle weakness caused by strong emotions. The first time I was aware of my cataplexy was when I was in college class. I remember being stood up when something made me laugh so hard that my knees fully buckled. I couldn't stop laughing and I couldn't stand up either. People with narcolepsy type 2 do not have cataplexy. I finally had a name for the alien abductions too. They were hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations, which can be visual, auditory, or tactile, and are often accompanied by sleep paralysis, which would also happen to me when I would wake up in the middle of the night, unable to move. Around the time I received my narcolepsy diagnosis, I started separating from my friends and feeling worse. There is a huge lack of awareness around sleep disorders in Mexico, so my friends, teachers, and family did not believe me when I talked about my symptoms. I think they sometimes still have trouble in believing it. Some of them told me they were also sleepy people, and others insisted I was making up all those sensations or that I was dreaming. And I understood their skepticism. How could they believe me? We are used to seeing stories of perfect lives on Instagram or TikTok. These kinds of stereotypes of how young women lead made me even question myself. I felt like I needed to look a certain way, act a certain way, and meet certain goals in a certain time. I wonder, could I ever be enough despite having narcolepsy? Could I ever have a job? I knew there were 3 million people worldwide affected by narcolepsy, but I didn't know any of them, and I felt so lonely. Clearly, a diagnosis was just the beginning of my journey. I started treatment with stimulants, and that did not work the way the neurologist and I expected. We tried mixing different stimulants with antidepressants, which also did not work. I began looking for other specialists who could help me, which is very difficult and expensive in Mexico. During this time, I cannot play sports, go to school, and study for an exam all in the same day, like seemingly everyone around me could. I cannot go to all of the parties my friends went to, and I saw so many Instagram stories of a bunch of 21-year-olds hanging out, and I couldn't be with them without feeling like I'd been awake for 72 hours. The despair of loneliness and the constant changes of medications were messing with my body and mind. Honestly, I thought I would never feel better, and I didn't see a way out. Through this time, I seldom spoke out about my narcolepsy diagnosis. People around me tended to stigmatize it because it had to do with sleep. They often thought I was exaggerating about my need for sleep, which made me feel embarrassed by it. A year had gone by when, a few days before turning 21, I met my current neurologist. He achieved what no one else had in a year and prescribed me the right medication. He also gave me a couple of life lessons. He told me I should never compare myself to anyone, and most important, I should never feel bad for having narcolepsy. I started deciding what things I see and believe on social media. I started to get involved with organizations and accounts related to narcolepsy awareness. I even created a narcolepsy awareness account on Instagram. I joined an amazing community of people with narcolepsy that support each other. Now, I know that every day is one step further in my progress. I can't avoid being constantly worried about my future, though. My head fills with doubts and thoughts about how I will face working or having children, which makes me feel very scared. Sometimes I can't avoid still feeling at a disadvantage compared with everybody else. Sometimes I think about all the things I have missed during my youth. I'm 21 years old, and people say I am living in the best time of my life. But honestly, that puts a lot of pressure on how I should be living. Having an amazing support network makes everything easier. It reminds me of all the great things I've gained from living with narcolepsy. Having the opportunity of connecting, speaking, and empathizing with other people living with narcolepsy makes me feel part of something. Hearing the stories of all those brave moms, dads, sisters, brothers, teachers, gives me hope for what is coming next. I deeply thank my parents, brother, grandparents, uncles, cousins, friends, and my neurologist for having my back throughout this journey. I am truly blessed for having all of you. I know I am a powerful woman with my own qualities and strengths. Despite all those social media images, I know it is okay not to be okay. It is okay to be different and to not have the seemingly perfect life an online influencer shows. I have learned it is fine if I am not the stereotypical girl society or Instagram says I should be. For me, the greatest encouragement is knowing that telling my story is one step in the spread of narcolepsy awareness. I did not choose to have narcolepsy, but I choose how to live with it. And I am sharing my story today as a part of Rising Voices of Narcolepsy, a program of the nonprofit organization Project Sleep, which empowers patient advocates to share their stories and improve public understanding of narcolepsy, which will not be able if we did not have Julie.
Thank you, Alexa. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for sharing today.
Are you facing sleep issues or sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
So you mentioned that you started an Instagram account, and I think your references back to social media in your essay are really, really powerful, because we all do this. We all look at Instagram and then think that that's reality. And it's hard to figure out that that's not, you know, for any of us, but then creating accounts around awareness and creating your own account. So what is your account and how has that experience been?
So basically I started an account called Narcolepsy Mexico, and I thought that no one would follow me. And then people started following me around the world. And also, I think just one people from Mexico who has narcolepsy, which is, I don't know, mind-blowing. And then people started to reach me and ask me about how I feel or if so we can relate with each other. And they also asked me, I don't know, about my medication or my doctors. So I decided to start this account because when I first discovered that I had narcolepsy, maybe I would love to have an account in Mexico. So I can, I don't know, I think it could be easier for me, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's why I started that account.
That's so good. We're so proud of you. And it's so cool that people are finding you.
Yeah.
So, and people can follow you. So you said that your family was supportive, and that one of the challenges that you face, and a lot of people face this in different countries, but maybe even more so there, was to help to get accommodations for your school.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
So yeah, first of all, my family has been the best. I am so lucky, really. As I already mentioned, there is a huge lack of awareness in Mexico about sleep disorders. And regarding the school accommodations, I don't think I have school accommodations. Well, my mom went to my college and talked to the principal of my career, you know, and told her, like, Alexa has narcolepsy and you need to understand. If you do not know, you can go ahead and Google it. And I am gonna, like, she brought all my medical stuff in the phone number of my neurologist, and she gave those to this teacher and told her, like, if you have any doubts, you can feel free to contact Alexa's neurologist. But I mean, like, this is a real thing, and I don't care. You need to support her. And she actually did, but because my mom forced her, or like,
yes. Your mom sounds like an amazing person. She really advocated.
Yeah, she has been there for me.
I was curious how you found your new neurologist that seemed to help more. Did you have to research to find a different one? Or how did you even know that maybe you should see someone different?
Yeah, so it was really tough because, so I went to my first neurologist, which he told me I have narcolepsy. And then we, as I already said, also we started with many meds. And then I was feeling really, really bad. And then I went to other neurologists that I found out, like on internet, on the same hospital. And then I went to other neurologists. So this was the third one. And a year had gone by and I was feeling really bad. And I was, yeah, so everything was wrong. And then I posted an Instagram that says if someone knew a neurologist specialized in narcolepsy or a great neurologist. And then a girl which was with me in school, in high school, which is called Carla Gomez, gave me the phone number of the neurologist that treated her mom a few years ago. And she told me, actually many people gave me phone numbers, but I don't know, like I felt that connection with Carla. And I mean, I said, I am gonna try again, you know? And I did not go with that neurologist. I was looking up for his information on Google and I came across with my current neurologist. I don't know, I just found out him in internet and I decided to pay him a visit and I am still with him.
Wow. Well, that's really cool. It's like almost like social media helped, but then you did your own research ultimately.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Well, that's really great that people really responded when you asked that question, you know, that had some ideas. That's great. Well, we're glad you found a better doctor. it's really challenging to find specialists that really understand and know some of the better treatment options. So then I had a question. So you're a pharmacy student. Did you make the decision because you knew you had narcolepsy, or did you decide that before you knew, or how was that played into your
experience? Yeah, I decided before I knew. Like, I don't know, I have always loved medicine, and that's why I chose the career that I am starting. And then when I found out that I had narcolepsy and I was seeking all those meds, I became obsessed with Googling everything that I was taking. I still do.
How do you feel like your experience when you are learning in school, do you feel like it's reflective of your personal journey? Or do you feel like that it should be more, the education should maybe be more patient-centered in any ways?
Well, so being able to study what I study and, I don't know, comparing it with my life living with narcolepsy, I think it has gave me more skills or weapons to understand better what I have. I don't know if that makes sense.
To better understand your narcolepsy experience as a person living with it?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think it'll make you a better pharmacist?
I hope it does.
I think so. So you talked a little bit in your essay about friendships and social life. And I'm having a feeling that you found some really supportive friends, because there's lots of people on here saying how much they love you and they support you from Mexico. So it sounds like you really built a community. But I know even for me, that initial experience was really challenging of how it affected my social life. And so can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so basically when I was in high school, and the beginning of my college, it was very difficult for me to go to the things that they invited me, because I had to drive and I was very sleepy, and I had these crazy headaches, crazy headaches. And I mean, I didn't tell them what that I don't know what I was feeling, because I thought, I don't know, I felt embarrassed, and I didn't know I had narcolepsy at that time. So I started separating from them, and eventually many of them did not invite me anymore. And I think some of them said that I basically separated from them. But I couldn't control it. But now, as you said, I have great friends, which they know what I have, and they are super supportive. And I don't know, I'm happy with all of them right now.
That's good. That's the power of knowing what you're going through too, because when you're not diagnosed, you don't have the language to explain. We have a question about what type of narcolepsy, and you have type 1, right? Narcolepsy with cataplexy. And then we have a question about how do you think a friend of a person with narcolepsy could better support their friend?
That's a great question. I feel like, I mean, just maybe listening and just be supportive in a way. I don't really know, like, if you feel tired, maybe one day, maybe just understanding what you are going through. I think that's the best support I can get.
Yeah. And flexibility, probably. Understanding and flexibility.
Yeah.
Have you had any friends that have looked up about narcolepsy on their own to learn more or do any kind of...
I don't know if they have.
Yeah. I would think that's really nice. That's like a nice show of that they tried to learn on their own a little bit. It was kind of nice.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, we have a question from your Uncle P, I believe. Uncle P.
Yeah.
And they asked if there is treatment or a cure for some milder types of narcolepsy. So,
do you want to answer that?
Well, there are treatments for all, you know, people with narcolepsy. There are different treatments here in the US, and I'm not sure if all the exact same treatments are available in Mexico.
Yeah, that's also a topic. We do not have the same meds that you have in the United States or in Europe, actually. But we have some of them.
And so then I think the idea of a cure is really interesting concept. And I think that's kind of where your pharmacy experience is also interesting. You know, I think when people think about treatment, they think it's almost like going to be a cure. You know, we're going to take treatment and just go back to our life. And so have you experienced side effects from medications? And obviously you've had to change medications too to find what works for you.
Yeah. So basically I experienced a lot of side effects. When I first started taking meds, I even had like 2 panic attacks and anxiety attacks, which I have never felt in my life. And I have these crazy headaches, like crazy headaches. I even had to take an MRI with contrast of my brain because the headaches were so hard. And yeah, then we changed medication. And now I think I am in the best time I have ever been. I feel great.
That's really good. It's so much more of a journey, you know, than just having the treatments, but it's good that you found a good one. Okay, Taylor in Los Angeles, she wants to know, how did you find Project Sleep?
Yeah, so basically, when I found out I had narcolepsy, I became obsessed Googling everything about narcolepsy and hallucinations and alien abductions. And I found out Project Sleep, and then I found out this program. When I first applied, I thought you will never contact me back. And then months later, I received your email saying that I can be in the program. So basically, I became obsessed, and I just started Googling. That's how I found out this amazing platform.
Actually, I remember the thing I always remember about your story with these alien abduction, the hypnagogic hallucinations you were experiencing. And I remember you sharing a little bit about that was hard in Mexico to talk about, maybe. Tell us about some of that.
Yeah, so many people and some of my friends told me I was dreaming, like one or two, because I didn't talk about it. It made me feel embarrassed. And also many of them told me I was having, I don't know how to say it in English, like projections, I don't know, astral projections, or I don't know, something like that, related with a more spiritual thing. So I was really afraid.
Were there any like religious kind of connotations?
Not religious one, but spiritual ones. So basically, I don't know how to call it, like when your soul, I don't know, gets out of your body and then you can see yourself in your bed, like you leave your body or something like that. That's what many people told me I was experiencing.
Wow. Well, and there's a real, you know, there's a different explanation for the reason that you're having them. So,
yeah.
Oh, and also your grandparents are cheering you on. People just want you to know how strong you are and how much they love you and how amazing that you are. And that you are a pioneer in Mexico for helping people with this condition. And so here we have, Maria would like to know, what do you think is the biggest stigma or myth surrounding narcolepsy that you'd like to see change?
I would definitely say that everything related with sleep. So the stigma that the way I feel tired, it's the same way you feel tired. And when I am sleepy, it's the same sleepiness that you have. You know, that's the greatest stigma. I mean, I think it's still hard for my loved ones to understand me. And I know they make a huge effort and I appreciate it. And I love them so much. But I think that's the stigma, that we feel the same sleepiness that everybody else.
So that you want to point out that it's different, right? It's a different kind of sleepiness?
Yeah.
Not the same?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Okay, we have a question about what's the difference between type 1 and type 2. So I know you did mention that in your essay, but do you just want to share again the difference between type 1 and type 2 narcolepsy?
Yes. So basically, type 1 is narcolepsy with cataplexy, which is sudden muscle loss. And if you have narcolepsy type 2, you do not have cataplexy. That's the difference.
And how is your cataplexy? I was wondering, you said that you first experienced that with laughter, and you have a beautiful sentence about that in wanting to laugh, but also feeling so weak. How is your cataplexy now?
It's, I don't know if I can say great, but I do not have many. Well, I do have cataplexy attacks, but they are very, like, they are not strong. And sometimes it is hard to people to see them. And then, yeah, so one day I was in college and I was with this friend called Rodrigo. And he told me, like, Alexa, what happened to your knees? And I told him, like, I don't know, this happens to me a lot. And he was like, weird. Yeah, that's the first time I became aware of my knees being buckled.
Yeah. So you kind of experienced it. You thought maybe it was just normal, like a normal
sensation. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So that's different. For me, I felt like it was very strange. I remember the first time I felt it and thought, oh, this is different. Like, this is not normal. But I know many people have experiences like you where they say, I didn't know, maybe everyone else's knees buckle when they laugh. Yeah. So then, let's see, Valeria would like to know, how can we help you and other people that are suffering from narcolepsy?
I think for me, just being there for me. And I always talk to try to raise awareness in just like by talking to people about it. I don't know, with your family at dinner or something. Maybe try to talk about sleep disorders. Or in general.
I'll add that Alexa is a trained advocate that can share her story too. So if people would like to have her share her essay or her story to other communities, that she might be willing. And she could always speak to schools or others or other people. So if you have any opportunities for her too, I think that would help her spread the word more, even more, to more people.
Yeah, actually, before the pandemic, I talked to the director of my career, and I told her, like, we have this thing in college where it's a week full of conferences for the students that study scientific careers. And I told her, like, maybe we can invite someone, like, you can choose it, or it can be maybe my doctor, or I don't know, you can choose it. But to talk about sleep disorders, because we talk about diabetes and many things. And she was like, I don't know, Alexa, let me see with, let me talk to this person. And I don't know, I hope we can do that.
Yeah, well, sleep disorders affect 1 in 5 people. So they're really not that uncommon. And narcolepsy affects 1 in every 2,000 people, which isn't all that uncommon either. So yes, we got to get you speaking in more places and continue to raise your awareness through your story too, because storytelling is so powerful. You've moved all of us so much today, so no one will forget your story. So we have Karina from Peru says hello, and she was wondering if you practice any sports. Do you play any sports?
Actually, I do not play sports. I just make exercise. And a few years ago, I played football, and it was great, like, but I do not play sports right now.
Do you get outside to walk or anything, or
like I do like gym stuff? Yeah, that's what I do.
And do you nap?
Yeah, but I tried not to, but I nap a lot. Yeah, especially if I have an exam, I nap like 2 hours in the afternoon, and then I start studying. That's the thing I do.
Yep, I feel you on that. let's see. So Grecia would like to know, do you think sharing this kind of information can raise awareness, even though we don't have sleeping disorders? So can people help you share? I think so.
Yeah, I do.
Because the interesting thing is, you never know when one of your friends has happened to me. I don't know if, Alexa, this has ever happened to you, where a friend of a friend ends up finding out that you have narcolepsy, and those connections can come through anyone, you know? So have you found any of that in serendipity, or kind of like on Instagram or anything, where people have said, oh my gosh, I didn't know that you had that, and then they learn more?
Yeah, many people actually have asked me, people who know me, like, I didn't know you have narcolepsy, and some people ask me about it, and it's great. But I do not know a single person in Mexico who has narcolepsy. I don't know why, but I hope I meet one day.
You gotta change that. That's all right. We're gonna report back on that. That'd be very cool if you could meet someone else in Mexico. I guess your doctor would know, but that would be, yeah, gotta find a way for you to meet. Okay, Rodrigo would like to know, how has narcolepsy changed the way you perceive yourself?
I think I always thought I had something wrong. And when I began to compare myself, it was really difficult. And then when I found out, now I perceive myself like a very strong person, actually. And I love that.
I agree. You're an incredible woman. We're so proud of you. And I know you were nervous, and I hope you will feel that this was a good experience and that it's worth it to work through those nerves, because we're just, your story is so important and will really continue to make a difference.
Yes. So basically, this has been one of the best experiences I have ever had in my life. But I just want to say to everyone, I know some of my friends, I am going to cry again, and my family and my grandparents and my uncles and my brother are watching me. So I just want to tell you that I appreciate, I am super blessed for having all of you. Thank you so much. And I love you guys.
That family support is so meaningful, and a friend support. So even though I'm not like your friend, like your family, I feel like that means a lot to know that your friends and family showed up for you. So yeah. Okay, guys. Thank you all for tuning in. And thank you, Alexa, for sharing.
Perfect. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Bye, everybody.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.